Good afternoon. Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a League of Nations among other Internet radio talk stations, Voices of the People, United We Roar. Today is April 14th, 2008, and now is the time for Kids, Tweens, and Teens, a positive psychologist looks at all three, with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Good afternoon, Lillian, and I'm so delighted that today Lillian Caldwell will stay on the line with me and not hover with the equipment because she is going to be my guest on Kids, Tweens, and Teens. This show evolved partly because of my latest book, The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And as I began to work on the book and create my first fictional character, the girl, I found that my time and energy was being pulled back to kids, tweens, and teens in my research, in my clientele, in just observing and reading the newspaper and staying abreast of the news and seeing where we're at with kids, tweens, and teens. I even found myself beginning to read literature again, the books out there for kids, etc. So I thought it would be a really great, fun, and different show to have Lillian Caldwell on, not in her role as the originator and CEO of her wonderful radio show that reaches around the world, shows the whole company, but as an author like myself, who has created fictional characters that are not adult, and we could chat about some of the purposes that we're both up to and what the characters are like and what the characters think about what's going on in the book, and we'll just sort of let it roll. So first of all, tell us maybe a little bit about I'm thinking of a book we discussed last year, and I don't know if that's any longer the main book on your mind, but I think there was a girl and a mystery and some supernatural.
Oh, yeah. It hasn't been published yet. I'm still waiting to hear from a particular publisher who seems somewhat interested in it. So I sent them a whole manuscript. But basically, it's about a girl. She's 12 years old. She's not a little kid, but she's not quite a teenager yet. And she has a friend who is a boy, which cannot be confused with boyfriend because that's not their relationship. She has a friend who's a boy, so they just mess around and do things together, but that's about the extent of it. And then she has an annoying younger brother who tags along because he finds his older sister and her friend activities a lot more stimulating than what he's doing with his friends. And since all three of them live out in the country, away from the city, there aren't that many kids out there to start out with. So the three of them are pretty much thrown together. And this young lady is a tomboy. She loves playing sports, and she likes to be one of the guys. And her parents both work because they are living in the country because they want better things for their kids, and they did not want to raise their kids in a southern city. And the book takes place in Georgia, Lowry, Georgia, which is a fictional town, and I placed it near the famous Chenault plantation, southern plantation, that had been established before the war between the states. And while I was trying to figure out an appropriate adventure to get her involved in, I wanted for her to solve a problem without too much help from adults. So in that respect, I had her parents both work. One is a nurse, and the other one is a police officer. And so they're gone all day long. And they decided they needed to bring in the grandmother or the mother of the woman who's the nurse. She lives out in Simon's Island off the coast of Georgia. And I did this because there's a lot of history tied up in Georgia and off the coast of Georgia involving Southern white plantation owners and slaves and free blacks. And I decided that there wasn't really too many adventure stories out there for non-white preteens to read. And that while Harry Potter and some of the other books that were out there were wonderful for white kids, it really did not address some of the needs or the problems or some of the growing up that black kids and Hispanic kids and Chinese kids encountered, because their social culture was a bit different. Even the blacks who were raised in the States, the culture down south is very different from the culture that's from the Midwest, for the example, or even in the North. Things are just done differently. And when I was a young girl, around 15, I worked as a counselor in training at a YWCA camp in Pine Bush, New York. And I remember a group of young ladies coming up from Georgia, from the South, who were black. And we had problems really relating and communicating with each other, because neither one of us trusted the other. Neither one of us had ever seen someone black or seen somebody white. And you had a lot of preconceived notions that had already been instilled. And at the end of the summer, yeah, we were talking to each other, because I almost broke my neck falling off something that I was trying to help one of those kids with, and all of a sudden they realized I wasn't the enemy. But it took them a long time. So for these reasons, I decided to write books for kids who were not white, because there was a real need for them. And what I did is I went out and I spoke to some teachers in junior high, and I spoke to the librarians who worked with the junior high crowd. And they told me that most kids, black or white, had no knowledge of their own history. They were sadly neglectful in that, and that none of them really knew their cultures. And so I thought, well, maybe if I can write a story that encompasses everything, the kids will read it and never realize, as my son would say, they're getting edumacated.
Right, right. Now, the girl in the book is what ethnicity is she?
She's an African American, and her brother's African American.
And the boy she plays with?
Is Latino. He's Hispanic. Uh-huh. But he's been Hispanic. His family has lived in Georgia since the 1500s, when
wow.
the Spanish moved in from Florida. So I did this because I wanted to give them roots. And if I ever did a future book or series, I wanted to deal with the Spanish living in Georgia.
It's so interesting, well, Lillian. You're making me think a mile a minute as I listen to you. I did almost the exact opposite in my book. Now, my girl is 10 to 11 and a half. In the first book of what I will make a series, I'm almost done with the second book, where she grows to 14 to 16, I mean 12 to 14. But I have done like the reverse. She doesn't have a name because I want her to be any of us. It's unclear her religion. It's unclear her ethnicity, although I think it would be fair to assume she's white from some of the things that are there in terms of the style of their life and so forth. Maybe I'm even wrong on that. I'll have to go back and think further about that. Her parents work, but it's never that clear what they do. In other words, I have created situations where her thoughts and her feelings and her values and her own energies and the things on her mind are very, very clear and very important to her. But the background is almost like muted. It would almost be like characters on a stage where the family... Oh, I'm thinking of Our Town.
Yes.
Or Death of a Salesman. You know how in those plays the characters are so real, but the background is, it could just be almost like a muted brown wall behind them.
Right.
And with you, it's like just the opposite. I mean, I'm already like hungry to go to Georgia. You're just making me like want to see the water and the swamps, and I don't know what's there, but I'm getting, you know, all these sort of half-romantic, excited feelings hearing about their, you know, where they live and in the country. This is fascinating.
Well, I wanted to give her a base. Somebody said create a world. So I wanted to give her a world, but I wanted to give her a world that was changing. I placed the book in the mid-1990s, which meant that some civil rights had come to the South, but they're still fighting. And that some of the research I did still has the kids going to school where the class itself is segregated into different groups.
Uh-huh.
The blacks sit with the blacks, the whites sit with the whites, the poor whites sit with the poor whites, and the Hispanic and the Asian somewhere take up the rear of the room.
So they're in the same room, but they go into their own clans.
Yes. And they do not break. It's taboo to go from one clan to the other.
Right.
And so what I do is, of course, there's a fire, which means in the next book they'll have to go to school in a bigger city where they won't have such distinctions going on. It's only in the countryfied parts of the South in Georgia that you find this, because people are still fighting the war between the states, and they don't like these strangers, these foreigners. There was an article I read about where the Viet Cong have moved in a lot into certain parts of Georgia. And the people look at them, not the upper-class whites, but the lower-class whites and the ones who used to be tenant farmers and crop shares, they look with these people at suspicion because they know these people have more on the ball and are more educated than their own kids, and therefore they are a threat to them. And so they don't like it.
There seems to be a multitude of social issues that can be discussed from this book.
Yes.
Let alone the actual sequence of events that the girl is going to go through.
Exactly. I mean, there are just a lot of things going on there that I'm asking people to step inside her world and see how she looks at it. Everything is written in the first person. So if she's not there to observe it, then it doesn't exist until she comes into contact with it, because you only have her feelings, how she looks at things, how she deciphers things, and occasionally feedback from her grandmother. Now, I put the paranormal in there because I know at 12 years old, sometimes things happen and you don't have a clue as to why they're doing it. It's outside of your known world. And my mother worked when I was growing up during the 50s and 60s. So there was a lot of things that I missed with her since she was never around. She was always working. And so this is the same thing with this young lady. She's 12. There's some areas she's very sophisticated in, but there are other areas that she's clueless, and she really doesn't have anybody to initiate her into the world of being a girl. And I know from personal experiences that there's somebody there and that they don't talk to you about certain things that happen to you as you're growing up. Learn how to keep yourself clean and do your nails and your emotions go really out of balance at that time of your life, and there's all kinds of things going on, and you don't have somebody to interpret these signals for you. It's very easy to get lost or confused.
Yeah, and so that's a whole other set of issues that can be discussed by a group of kids who are reading this book, you know, with teacher support, guidance counselor support, parents. Sounds, it all, you know what it sounds like to me? and I just hope our world is ready for this. It sounds like you have written the kind of quality book that used to be available, like Anna of Green Gables, like a dense book that has so many different issues in it.
Well, you're right, and I don't think so. In fact, the publisher who's looking over my book is in Canada, and their reputation rests on books that are different from mainstream fiction that most New York publishers accept, because it has a lot of things that are at odds with it. Kids at 12-year-old don't have a concept of loyalty. One minute you're your friend, the next minute they are your enemy. And that's pretty much how I have it with Anime and her friend Raoul. One minute they're good friends, and the next minute they're fighting and they're split, and he's going somewhere else where he feels he's more appreciated, and of course she feels that she's been betrayed. And the whole thing that saves both of them is Grandma, who is the wise woman. I don't say it in so many words, but she is the wise woman, and she's the one who pretty much interprets for both of them what's going on in their world and why things are so chaotic at times between them. And a lot of it, and this is where Anna May gets her paranormal powers from. And
from the
grandmother. It skips her daughter. Her daughter doesn't trust it. She doesn't like it. And, you know, at the beginning of the book, her husband doesn't like it either. He, even though he's not a religious man, he considers it evil. And one of the things you have Anime parrot to Rao is, Mama says, I won't ever have that woman, you know, in my house again, ever. Because he doesn't, he's a policeman. Things are either seen or they're not seen, and there's always a good explanation for it. And if you cannot find an explanation for it, then you ban it from your house because it's threatening. Now, my husband is a chemist. He's a scientist, and he's very much that same way. There's no such thing as a supernatural. Things don't go bump in the night. There's always a logical explanation for it. And if you can't figure it out, well, you throw it out the window then, because it never happened in the first place. Which might work fine for him, but for me it drives me crazy.
So I'd like to interrupt just to make such an important point from a psychological point of view. You're really doing such a service to the kids that will read this book by putting in something like her capacities for the paranormal, because kids really have no one to tell them whether they're normal or bizarre, you know, except parents, teachers. And if you have a kid that's sort of like a different bird in the nest from the rest of the family, that person can feel that their talents are really grievous errors, and they must, you know, they have these horrible things wrong with them, while really they just are cut from a different piece of cloth.
And you don't really learn how to value yourself until you're an adult.
Yeah.
And you miss out on a lot of things as you're growing up because you don't fit in. It doesn't matter what you do to try to be like everybody else. Something is going to stick out from you to make you different.
Right. I stuck out from my cousins, and I was always dumped there. That was the free babysitter. My aunt was a lovely woman. Her kids were nice kids. But I was so different from my three cousins, and being there a lot made me feel that somehow I was just not quite, you know, quite in keeping with the, you know, sort of like being in a foster home or something a night or two a week, and you're just not quite in your own element. And it's not always the best feeling.
No, I tried to explain it once to a friend. I said, it's like being in a crowd of people, except I'm not part of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always alone. I'm always standing out. And it doesn't matter how many people around me. I said, I know people can spot me because I'm always the one that's the different color type thing.
Well, for me, the magic came when we moved as a family to another town, made us too far to use this. You know, I never went to my relatives again except on a holiday kind of thing. And my mother saved me. And I think it's such a cute story. I was really struggling so hard to make friends, but it was not really working. And she suggested that if I got a couple of kids' telephone numbers, she would invite them over for pizza. And I did that, and they came over. Well, it started this whole world of fitting in. It was the right group, the right crowd, you know, the right circumstances. And, wow, did that feel like a miracle had happened.
Well, I'm glad it happened for you. It didn't happen for me until I moved away from home.
Oh, wow.
And realized that I was who I was, I wasn't going to be able to change, and that if I didn't like myself, nobody else would. So once I started liking myself, things started changing. But it wasn't until I realized that whoever I was, this is just the way I was, and I was going to have to deal with it and get over it before anybody else could deal with it and get over it with me.
And there probably was nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with you. You just have your own unique style.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so I think we're both out there kind of being pioneers, really trying. I'm trying with also the background of the positive psychology on top of everything else to help girls and women feel all right with themselves, feel more than all right, feel empowered with special gifts and talents and strengths and courageous to act out, act with the potential that exists inside of them. And you're trying to affirm a lot of the same things from the vantage point of a complex novel.
Yeah. I want girls to know that they're just as bright as boys, that they can have adventures, and they don't have to sit around in little white anklets and velveteen shoes and wear their gloves and their little short dresses. That is okay for them to become grubby. They can climb a tree. It doesn't take away from them being a female. They can still be caring and compassionate and love and be as grubby as the kid next door and climb underneath a car. That's going to make them happy to do what's going to be good for them. And I think it's important for girls to hear this.
Oh, it sure is. Wow, our time is running out. Lillian, now, if in the worst of all worlds, will you self-publish or find a way to get this wonderful novel out?
I will try and get it out because I'm working on the second book, and the second book is a little more complex. The first book dealt with the discovery of Jefferson Davis' lost Civil War gold. And the second one is based on the old fable between King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba.
Great.
So
wow.
The young lady goes, travels to Israel, and then she goes through the Egypt, and then she eventually winds up in Ethiopia looking for King Solomon's Ark.
Well, I hope you find the right publisher, but it is in this today's age just as, you know, almost as viable a route to do self-publishing, particularly if you can find a distributor.
Yes.
So, you know, there are many roads to go. What is the title of your first book again?
Anime. It's called The Anime Mysteries. Book one is The Golden Treasure. And then the second one is called The Anime Mysteries, King Solomon's Ark.
And do you have excerpts or anything available for your following on the radio site at all? Or?
I don't have anything posted as of yet, but I could put down the first chapter if people are interested.
I think it would be delightful to, you know, even send me the first page, and I'll put it up on my blog.
Okay.
You know, and we'll just go from there, just give people something else to read.
Sure, not a problem.
So let me finish up by saying I've had the pleasure of Lillian Caldwell and as my guest, who is also basically the host and producer of all these shows on InternetVoicesRadio.com. And I'm Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. This is my show, Kids, Tweens, and Teens. I invite you to come to my website, enchantedself.com, and also to read my new book, The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And you will find it an extremely helpful book if you view it in particularly as a mother-daughter book, where you read it and your daughter or your niece or your cousin or your godchild reads it also. And then you use it as a jumping-off point to so many, many relevant issues. Growing up, developing physically, falling in love, having a crush, brats, being bossed, being bullied, having to relocate, families fighting, etc. So, thank you, Lillian. Is there anything else you want to identify yourself by before we say goodbye?
Oh, no, not yet. Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. You've just listened to Dr. Barbara Becker-Hallstein in Kids, Tweens, and Teens. A positive psychologist looks at all three. She interviewed my alter ego, Lillian Caldwell, author, who wrote the anime mysteries book one, The Golden Treasure, which eventually will be accepted somewhere, somehow. And if you want to hear this all over again, please go over to http://internetvoicesradio.com. And then on the left-hand side of the page, you'll see the word archives. Click on that. A list of names will appear. Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein's among them. And she also has a silver page as a silver person. So please look at her second one as well. If you want to download an MP3 stream, go down to the lower right-hand side of the page where it says VIP program. Click on that and sign up as a free member. And then for $2.60, you can download the MP3 stream or any of Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein's MP3 streams. All proceeds go to charities. And if you do want a hard transcript, well, contact L. Caldwell at internetvoicesradio.com and let me know. We're trying out a new program. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And before you go away, Jules Renard from 1908 had this to say, the danger of success is that it makes us forget the world's dreadful injustice. Thank you very much for listening. Tonight, you will not hear about marketing for fun and profit or authors on track or what's happening for the next 2 weeks because Janet Elaine Smith is moving from North Dakota to Wisconsin, and she just can't do it all. So Janet will be rejoining us at the end of the month, April 28th, followed by Toni Quest, the Screaming Woman, and then rounding up the evening, Tom Zort's Poetry 30-Minute Show. So thank you all very much for listening, and remember, have a good evening. Thank you, and good night.